I forgot to give Matt the Bible puzzles for the children's class. So they look a little different. If your kid wants to get one at the media booth, they look like this tonight. Those are back there, and Connor will hand you one. I didn't have room on my slides for the little puzzle star that I usually use, so that's why the puzzles look different. If you're visiting with us, we're certainly glad that you're here, and we welcome you back anytime that you have an opportunity to be with us. And we're going to start a mini-series tonight on inheritances. I'll have the first lesson tonight, and then Brother Guy on August the 12th, Sunday morning, we'll talk about inheritances, and then Matt Taylor will conclude the series that Sunday night. So we're grateful that you can be with us this evening, and I hope that our study this evening is beneficial to us. And I've titled mine, Passing the Inheritance, this evening. And lots of times when you hear sermons on inheritances, we immediately think about a spiritual inheritance, and I'm quite certain that that's what the other two gentlemen will talk about, but I'm actually going to talk about the earthly inheritance. Now, if you're a young person, you probably haven't started about thinking about passing an inheritance yet. Maybe you've thought about getting an inheritance. But as you get a little bit older, and especially when you start having kids, you start thinking about, you know, who's going to get these things? And that's what I want to talk about this evening is passing the inheritance. And it's a question from Luke chapter 12 and verse 20. There are things that are left behind. 1 Timothy 6 verse 7, for we brought nothing into this world and we can take nothing out of it. Psalm 49 verse 10, for all can see that the wise die, that the foolish and the senseless also perish, leaving their wealth to others. So we can't take anything with us when we go. We live this life and we accumulate things. But when we leave this earth, we're not taking anything with us. Now, there are people who don't know that. You know, there are tombs all over the world that have treasure in them, and there are people who are treasure hunters who go raiding those tombs trying to find the treasure that's buried with people because people think they're taking that treasure with them. It's still there. There are some civilizations that used to, when they would bury the person, they'd put two coins on their eyes so they could pay the person who carried them on their voyage from death to the next realm. And if you dug up those corpses, those two coins are still sitting there. You can't take anything with you. And so we work in this life and accumulate things. Who's going to inherit those things? Who will inherit your things? Who will inherit my things? And it's a question that Jesus asked in response. If we go to Luke chapter 12, in verse 13, I don't have it on the screen, but in verse 13, a man comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, will you tell my brother to divide the inheritance? I don't know if this man's parents have passed away or some relative or whatever, who this inheritance has come from, but he asked Jesus, would you tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me? And now in Luke 12, we'll start in verse 16, Jesus tells a parable. And he told him this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I'll store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? The NIV says it that way. The Living Translation says, then who will get everything you worked for? The King James says, who shall those things be which thou hast provided? Basically, who's getting the inheritance? All these things that we've worked for, where are they going? And what's going to become of them? It's a question that's asked. And it's a question that I thought about in this sermon originated on Arlington Road. Arlington Road is here in Athens, and I'll tell you a bit more about that in a moment, but there were a couple of things that were going on when I was working on this job about that same time. One of those things is Brooke and I were getting ready to sign our wills. If something happens to us, who's going to get the kids and whatever possessions we have in this life? And so I was already kind of thinking about these things. The other thing that happened about that time is I worked on this job on Arlington Road, and I want to tell you a little bit about it. This house was owned by Mr. and Miss Jones. I didn't know Mr. and Miss Jones. I never met Mr. and Miss Jones. But I'm out there to do the work on this house that was owned by Mr. and Miss Jones. And Mr. and Miss Jones had two sons. And, you know, I don't know if they ever had the conversations like we had around my house about who's going to get these things when we pass on. But I imagine they thought their sons would inherit these things. This house and the possessions in the house. I guess they thought it would probably go to their two sons. Just like Brooke and I think our things would probably go to our two kids. Maybe that's what they thought. Well, Mr. Jones, I guess, had passed on. And Mrs. Jones couldn't live by herself anymore. So the options are we can move somebody in with her to take care of her, or we can move her into an assisted living facility. And I guess they chose to move her into an assisted living facility. So the house is being sold, and the contents are being sold to pay some of the nursing home bill. Now, my grandmother lives in an assisted living facility, and excuse my poor grammar, they ain't cheap. $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month, depending on how long they live, can be a lot of money. And so they're selling this house and they're selling the contents in the house. Who's getting the inheritance? Well, I can tell you the nursing home's going to get a good portion of it. What about the rest? Let me tell you about the rest of it. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, there's a crowd that's followed Jesus up onto a mountaintop, and he begins to preach a sermon to them. And he tells them, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Let me tell you a little bit about what I do. I think most people here think I'm a brick mason. I haven't bricked a house since 2010. Most of what I do is repair work for realtors. A realtor will call me and say, hey, we've got this house, and it's got a checklist of things that need to be repaired. There's holes in the sheetrock. The paint needs to be touched up. There's a leak in the ceiling. The foundation needs extra support. There's a couple electrical things that need to be brought up to code. You know, they can call five different people, or they can call me. So if you're in the audience and you're a realtor, that's my shameless plug of what I do. And so they call me, come out and fix the stuff. What are Matt and I doing at this house? I'm fixing the rust. This house is broke down over time because building materials do that over time. They break down. You have the elements, heat, cold, wind, water. They cause decay, deterioration, erosion on these materials. It shouldn't be a surprise to us. That's exactly what Jesus said, where moth and rust destroy. That's what happens with the things in this world. My livelihood is based on where moth and rust destroy. I go out and repair it all the time. It's what I'm out there doing on this house. You know, they gave some money to the nursing home. They had to pay us some money to do some repairs. On that house, it was a pretty significant amount, about $8,000 worth of damage. And I'll tell you this, if you have gutters, you find one of these young men at church and pay him $100 to clean your gutters, because if you don't, you'll be paying me a lot more than that to fix whatever damage it does. $8,000 worth of damage on that house, over half of it because the gutters weren't cleaned. The water didn't get away from the house. It went under the house and caused all kind of damage under the house. Now, I don't get to keep all that money. I got to pay for materials and licensing and insurance. So we can see this inheritance is already starting to spread pretty thin, isn't it? That's what I'm doing out there on the house. But I'm not out there by myself. Now, usually on these real estate transactions, by the time I get a call, the house is empty. You know, the house is already sold. It's pending these repairs, waiting on a closing date. And so I go in. There's nobody there. I do the repairs, and then I get a check from a lawyer when the house closes. But the realtor tells me on this one, you're going to be working with an estate company on this. I said, I'm going to be working with an estate company. She said, yeah. All the contents are still in the house. And so the estate company is coming in, and they're going to have an estate sale, you know, the week that you're going to be doing the repairs. So I'm in there on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're having their sale on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And Guy could probably tell you a lot more about estate sales than I could, because I didn't know anything about them. So I go out there, and I'm doing my repairs. Well, they're out there Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, labeling things and setting up for the estate sale. But I want to tell you, they didn't break into the house to steal. They got a key to walk in the door. The stuff got taken out of that house. It didn't make it to that estate sale. Got taken right out the door. You know, as I was watching them, you know, getting ready, they're putting labels on stuff. This is labeled for this price. This is labeled for that price. And there was a lot of trash they were taking out and putting in the garbage cans. And then they also had these black, like, hefty bags, you know, the garbage bags, that they were taking out and putting in the car. You know, there's four or five different employees, and each of them's taking garbage bags out and putting these garbage bags in their car. And so I guess finally curiosity got the best of me. And I said, what's in the garbage bags? Because I'm thinking, why would you put a garbage bag in your car? You know, my garbage runs at the house tomorrow, and I'm going to take it out to the road sometime tonight. I'm not going to put it in the car. Because you don't put garbage in the car. Whatever they were putting in the car wasn't garbage. I know what you know it. And so I asked one of the boys, what's in the garbage bag that you're putting in your car? He said, that's just stuff that wouldn't sell. Stuff that wouldn't sell? Like what? He said, well, you know, like toilet paper or paper towels, you know, canned food, things like that. That's what's pretty much in the garbage bags that we're putting in. That won't sell, so we could give it to Goodwill, but they just let us have it. I mean, I'm not Joseph. I'm not going to go through anybody's bag. So I said, okay, that's fine. That makes sense. I'm just learning about estate sales, guy. I don't know anything about them. So he's taking that stuff out, and he's putting it in his car. And they're labeling stuff and putting the value on it. I mentioned I'm out there to fix the rust. They're out there to assess the value of things. So what's the real value of things? Again, guy could tell you. It's worth what somebody pays for it, isn't it? It's worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. Now, there's a passage in Mark chapter 8 that we're all familiar with, verses 36 and 37. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? Now, that's a scary verse, and we'll talk some more about that in just a moment. But the estate company, they're out there to put the value on things. They're out there to price things, see how much money they can get for it in the sale. And what's interesting to me is they're going around, they're labeling the furniture and all the different things that are in the house, the appliances, whatever it may be, putting the price tag on things. There's a large cardboard box off to the side, and all the plaques go in it, and the trophies go in it, and the awards and the medals go in it, and the photographs even go in it. I said, what about this stuff? He said, that stuff ain't worth anything. Nobody's going to buy that. I said, nobody's going to buy that. He said, no, that's not, nobody wants that. Nobody's going to pay for that. And yet, the toiletries are going in their car. And that really made me think, what do we trade away, and what do we get in return for it? You know, here's a plaque, Employee of the Year. Employee of the Decade, let's say that. 10 years. A man gets this plaque, and he's traded hours, 40 hours a week, maybe overtime, maybe weekends, maybe holidays, time away from his spouse, time away from his kids, time away from his friends, time away from church, for years. And he gets this plaque, this slab of marble, or maybe it's just wood, with an inscription on it. It says, Employee of the Decade. And he thinks, man, I've really accomplished something. And so he goes and he puts it on the mantle, or maybe he hangs it right there in the hallway near the front door where people can see it when they come in. You know, maybe he has a display case with some other awards that he's got in life, and he puts all these awards where everybody can see them. Look what I have accomplished. Look what I have done in life. And yet, this thing that this man puts so much time, effort, and money into, this thing that this man thinks is so valuable, when he is dead and gone, the estate company is going to come in and they say, that ain't worth nothing. This is a can of SpaghettiOs, a dollar at Publix. He'll take that home. Employee of the Decade, who cares? SpaghettiOs, lunch. What are we trading? And what are we getting in return for it? Maybe it's a question we ought to ask ourselves. There are a lot of people who trade away a lot and only get very little in return. We go back and look at this passage in Mark 8. What can anyone give in exchange for their soul? I don't know, but they overpaid. They absolutely overpaid. And if any one of us would give anything in exchange for our soul, we overpaid. We didn't make a good investment. And if you don't take anything tonight, except maybe slide number 12 here, understand that, you know, the things in our life, it better be worth what we're trading for it. Not just the time and the effort and the money, but whatever we took that time and effort and money away from to get it. Is it really worth it? Would it be worth it to somebody else? Is it worth it to your spouse? Is it worth it to your kids? The SpaghettiOs weren't the only thing taken, and I didn't take the SpaghettiOs. These were the ones from the house, but I don't want you to think I stole the guy's SpaghettiOs. Other things were taken too. You know, I hope it's a number of years before I need a walking cane. I had to have surgery a few years back, and I had to have a walking cane for rehab. And my mom gave me one that was my granddad's. You know what it looked like? It looked like an old man's cane. I thought, man, when I get to be an old man, I don't want an old man cane. I want something stylish. I want something that looks good. Well, Mr. and Miss Jones had a Louisville Slugger baseball bat cane. I didn't even know they had such a thing. The Louisville Slugger, the baseball bat company, makes a walking cane. You can look it up on Google. Not right now, but in a little while. They make a walking cane. And I see this walking cane sitting there, and I thought, hey, that's pretty neat. I hope I don't need a cane for a number of years, but when I have to have one, I think I want one like that. And so I asked one of the people, what is that? What's that going to sell for? And so she looks it up online, and she says, well, this particular one is $75, which means the posting value on Thursday, the first day of the sale, is a third of that, $25. You can buy it right now for $25. I didn't want that cane that bad. They said, now, if you come back on Friday and it's still here, it's 25% off of that. So that $75 cane is $18. I still probably don't want it that bad. They said, but if you come back on Saturday and it's still here, it's 50% off of that. So it's $9. I'd give $9 for that baseball bat cane. They said, but now, if it's still here, on the last day of the sale, it's 75% off, but a penny takes it home. Guy, I wonder how many things you've taken home for a penny. Probably quite a few. And it would have been worth a penny. Think about how much they paid for that cane. And you think, I wonder how much it sold for. Well, whatever it sold for, the estate company got half of it. For every two pennies they got, the estate company got one of those. But that cane didn't make it to the sale. Because by our last day on the job, I'm looking around at the piles of stuff. That cane's nowhere to be seen. I wasn't the only one who'd noticed that baseball bat cane. Where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. These things shouldn't be a surprise to us. Jesus warned us. This is exactly the problem with earthly wealth. With putting our faith and our confidence in earthly riches. It's a vanishing inheritance. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 5, cast but a glance at riches and they are gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. You got legal cost, you got the cost of repairs, you got the real estate cost, you got nursing home cost, you got the estate sale cost, you got theft. There's not a whole lot left for these two sons, is there? But here's the really surprising part. Here's probably the part you weren't expecting. The two sons didn't care. You know, we probably think our kids want all this stuff that we accumulate. We may even tell ourselves, I'm working so hard for them. It's for them that I'm doing this, that I go through this grind day after day, that I spend time away from them to make money, to buy these things that they're going to want, that they're going to inherit it, and they may not even want it. They may not even care. I had one conversation with one of the two sons. it probably wasn't a two-minute conversation. I explained to him what I was going to be doing. He said, do it. I asked about closing, and he said, I'm coming to town one time. The one I talked to, I think he lived in Atlanta. The other one may have lived in Pittsburgh. They weren't coming to Athens, Alabama anytime soon. He said, I'm making one trip. He said, I'm coming. I'm signing that house. I'm collecting that check from the estate company. I'm going home. He didn't care about anything in that house. He didn't care about the house. I don't know what his relationship was like with his parents. He may have had a great relationship. He may have had a poor relationship. I don't know. He didn't want a thing. At least that's how it seemed to me. And maybe I'm going through life telling myself, you know, Cal and Olivia really want all this stuff that I'm trying to work so hard to accumulate. It may not mean a thing to them. It may get sold for literally pennies on the dollar to whoever will take it. And they'll just collect a check and go home. That's the problem with the inheritance. It vanishes. A lot of people have false confidence in their riches. Proverbs 18, verse 10. The name of the Lord is a fortified tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it a wall too high to scale. People trust in their wealth. They trust in what they have. They think, you know, bad things aren't going to happen to me. I'm protected because I have wealth. It's just not the case. Think about Solomon. Remember him as Israel's third king. Saul, David, Solomon. And then he passes not a fortified city, as he writes to his son. He passes an entire kingdom to Rehoboam. You get to the end of 1 Kings chapter 11, Samuel dies. 15 verses into chapter 12, that kingdom is split. He passed his son an entire kingdom. You talk about having money, wealth, something to actually pass along. Solomon had something. He got a lot more than I could ever imagine. And he passes it along to his son, and it lasts no time. And it's gone. And he's the very one who wrote, they imagine it a wall too high to scale. Got a lot of confidence in it. I think, well, my kids are going to be fine because I'm passing along a couple of dollars. Is that what I'm going to put my confidence in? Go back to Luke chapter 12. We read 16 through 20, but I didn't read 21. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. This is how it's going to be for whoever has this line of thinking, but is not rich toward God. That's the warning that Jesus gives the man who's worried about the inheritance. This is how it's going to be. That same warning applies to us. The problem with riches is they don't last. 1 John 2:17, this world is passing away. Everything in this world is passing away. It doesn't last. The other problem is it can't save. It's not going to save us. Proverbs 11, verse 4, riches do not profit in the day of wrath. It doesn't last. It cannot save. We went to Matthew 6. We're going to go back there again. Verse 19, we read, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Now verse 20, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The Living Translation says it this way, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. The desires of your heart, what motivates you? Your heart motivates you. Your thoughts motivate you. And it's what controls or determines your actions. So what or who controls our life? We skip on down there a few verses in Matthew 6 to verse 24. No one can serve two masters, for you will either hate one, love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God, and I like this translation, and be enslaved to money. Enslaved. We're supposed to be slaves to righteousness. And yet he says, some are enslaved to money. It's a trap. What's a blessing to some is a trap to others. Money, wealth, riches. Kind of like fire. You know, a couple of Christmases ago, I got one of those green egg cooker smokers. And I like to get out there and in the driveway while the kids are, you know, playing on the tricycle or whatever and cook dinner. And you control the temperature on that thing by, you know, the intake and the exhaust, how much air you let go across the fire. So, you know, you let less air across the fire, then the fire gets smaller and the temperature goes down. Let more air go across it and the fire gets bigger and the temperature goes up. So it's pretty simple to me because I'm an adult and mature enough to understand how it works. But I don't let the kids anywhere near it because it's a fire. It would burn them. It would hurt them. It would scar them. I wouldn't tell the kids go play with matches. Burn the house down and kill themselves. They're immature. They don't know. That's exactly how wells can be. In the hands of a mature person who doesn't let it control them, they can handle it. It's not a problem. But in the hands of an immature person, it's devastating. It can wreck and ruin their lives. It can be a helpful tool. It can be a devastating force. Riches can keep someone from Christ. It did the rich young ruler. We all remember this story. Luke chapter 18. Jesus has this man come to him. He says, "Hey, I've kept all the commandments. What else do I need to do?" So picking up verse 22, "So when Jesus heard these things, he said to him, 'You still lack one thing. Sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me.'" Verse 23, "But when he heard this, he became very sorrowful, for he was very rich." I want to tell you, this man did not possess wealth. His wealth possessed him. It controlled his decisions, not God. That's the problem with putting confidence in earthly things. As we conclude this evening, things are bought and sold. We buy and sell things all the time. You know, you get on Facebook, there's a little link at the bottom that says Marketplace. You can get some good deals on Marketplace. And it's things people have bought that they realize, I don't need this. And they're selling them at a fraction of the price. Bought and sold. But there's one thing that's a buy and hold. Brother James mentioned this verse in his prayer this morning. Proverbs 23, verse 23. Buy the truth and do not sell it. If we want to give our kids an inheritance, something worth having, then we give them the truth. It's the most valuable inheritance that there is. God's Word is a treasure, an eternal investment that should never be sold. There is an inheritance for us. Our Father prepared it for us. And for those who've been keeping up with the Bible puzzle, the answer is from 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you." It's an inheritance worth passing. I appreciate your attention this evening. If you would, take out your songbooks if you're using them. We'll pull up the song slide in just a moment. And we're going to sing a song of invitation. And if there's anyone here who has not come to Jesus before, why not tonight? Tonight is the perfect opportunity. You come, confess His name, repent, which means to change, be baptized for the remission of sins. If we can help you with that or anything else, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.